This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hall with 12 seconds left. Picked up now. They're chanting Thompson's initials into the closing moments. 5 seconds left. Puck out of the zone, and that is going to do it. Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Carolina. We are all square heading to the Tar Heel State. Final score, Washington 3 and Carolina 1.
John Walton on Caps Radio last night with the final seconds of Washington's Game 2 series evening win over Carolina. Really good win, totally different from Game 1 after the first period, which felt like an extension of Game 1. But starting in Period 2 last night, the Caps were clearly the better team, and it paid off as they go back to Carolina for Game 3 tomorrow night. Sean McDonough was on the call last night for ESPN. That didn't make a lot of you happy for some reason. He'll be on with us at 12:30 today. Today is mock schedule teaser day. 11 a.m., an hour from now, I'll give you my Washington mock schedule season opener and one other significant mock schedule game for Washington, and then we'll do most of it on Monday, although I'll have some of it out this weekend on my podcast. But I do want to mention, I have seen some of the leaked games, and I will be honest with you, I finished my mock schedule yesterday, right after the show, in fact. I spent some time working on it, finished it up, and those leaks sometimes are right, and sometimes they're dead wrong. I had Mike North from the NFL office. He's one of the key people involved in making the schedule on the show roughly a month ago. You're going to hear a lot of what he said about Washington and how they're viewing Washington this year, and Washington on holidays, Washington in prime time, and what he thinks about all of these leaks on the schedule that start coming out a few days before the schedule comes out. The schedule officially comes out on Wednesday of next week, but on Monday, the NFL will start to leak some of the, not leak, announce some of their highlighted games for the year. So 11 a.m. for my mock opener and one other significant mock scheduled game. But you'll hear Mike North and some of the things he told us a month ago, the key schedule maker, on the show coming up in this hour. This from Henry via email. Henry writes, Kevin, saw that you're having Sean McDonough on the show today. I know you and know you won't pass up the opportunity to ask him why he's so biased against the Caps. Let him have it, Sheehan. So we'll get to the game last night, but I wanted to start with this because Max texted me early in the game last night. and suggested that maybe fans believe that Sean McDonough, I think you sent me a tweet from Grant Paulson.
That I did, yes.
And others were sending me various tweets and suggested that Sean McDonough's super biased. Now, let me just tell you, I'm a massive Sean McDonough fan. I have been. Those of you who have been listening for years, I can't get enough over the years of playing his highlight of the fumbled punt in the Michigan-Michigan State game about 8-9 years ago. I think he's just flat out one of the best play-by-play guys in the sport. I think he's one of the most versatile play-by-play guys in the sport. The one thing I've always really enjoyed about Sean and his calls of games is he's a little bit unique in that as a play-by-play guy, and this isn't for every play-by-play guy, and it's not for everybody out there, but he actually injects opinion into the broadcast, which for some play-by-play people, that's like a no-no. You're there to call the game, and the analyst is there for the opinion. But Sean's done that on football. He's done that, everything that he's, you know, called over the years. I actually like it because I think he's got a very, very sharp view and opinion on almost everything that he calls. But I heard this a little bit after game one, and I then really tried to listen very carefully last night. Guys, I'm not hearing it. The Caps sucked in game one. They were horrible in the first period last night. What do you want him to do? Like, he is calling the game. He is prone to injecting some opinion into it. But once the Caps flipped the game, I didn't feel like that there was any bias. I think this is a fan thing. I used to jump on a lot of you because I didn't feel the same way. Look, I think there have been times when I've felt like, you know, the announcer's been biased in calling a game. I do think, I'm sure that I've probably said that over the years. But the worst of all time in terms of fan reaction to an announcer of one of our team's, you know, games, Troy Aikman. Nobody took more heat when he called Washington games than Troy Aikman. By the way, Philly fans felt the same way about him. Giant fans felt the same way about him. There was a built-in assumption that Troy Aikman, because he was a Cowboy, could not be objective, could not be biased, could not avoid bias. I never felt that way about Troy Aikman. In fact, I had him on the show years ago. It was before one of a game that he was calling. It was on the pregame show that I did for 13 years. And he was a guest from the booth right next to me that particular night. And I asked him about that, and he said, oh, my God. He's like, Washington, they are, you know, Washington, Philly, and Giant fans, they can't stand me. But I get that going in. He said, the irony of that is I want Washington to be good again. He said, I remember what it was like when they were good. I want them to be good. I want these games to be much bigger games between Washington and Dallas. And I always felt, and I would say this, I heard that coming from Aikman when he did games. And look, I don't go into that thing objective either. I'm, you know, I can be slighted just as easily as many of you. I never felt that way about Aikman, though. I always thought he was excellent as an analyst and never felt like he was a Skins, you know, hater at all. And he told me that particular day or night that he wants the NFC East to get back to its heyday where all the teams are good. And he specifically, you know, pointed out Washington. So, look, I'm not the Caps fan that some of you are, okay? I've admitted that over the years. It's the one team of the pro sports teams in town that I just don't have and never have had. I don't know what the reason for it is. It's probably because I'm just not a hockey guy, but I've never had this incredible Caps passion. All right, I love the NHL playoffs. I love the intensity. I stayed up last night. I had the Vegas Edmonton game on last night as I was falling asleep, but I couldn't fall asleep. Max, did you stay up and watch the Connor McDavid move the pass to Draisaitl in overtime?
It's so funny. I was in the exact same position as you. I was laying in bed. I found it. I went to overtime. I was like, all right, let me put this on my phone. And I kept, like, my eyes started getting a little droopy, but every time they started getting droopy, a big play would happen. So it was, yeah, it was an electric game last night late.
So intense. And, you know, I wasn't planning. I'm not saying that I was planning on watching Edmonton-Vegas last night, but the basketball game was a one-sided beatdown last night, and there was only one game on. And I flipped it in bed, and I'm like, it's 4-4, you know, in the third period. Let's see if this thing goes to overtime because there's nothing better. And it was such a dramatic game. So many opportunities for the game to end. And then if you haven't seen the highlight of Connor McDavid's move in overtime and then the pass to Dreisaitl, who I think led the league in scoring, right? Or led the league in goals. Am I right about that? I think he did. I think that's the name that kept popping up every time I went to search to see where Ovechkin was.
It was Dreisaitl and Nylander were the top two goal scorers.
Is Dreisaitl the leading goal scorer in the postseason?
That sounds right, but I'm not.
Because I think that was his fifth playoff goal. Edmonton has won now, I think it's six games in a row. They were down 2-0 in their first round series. They won four straight, and they've won the first two in Vegas. Anyway, moving back to the subject, that was a phenomenal sports drama, that game last night. Hockey in the playoffs is great. But anyway, I've never been the Caps fan that I am the Redskins or Wizards or, you know, even Nats fan that I am. In order, Skins, Terps, Hoops, all right? 1-1A, and I put them in either order you want. It depends on how, you know, on the year and the feeling. It's probably Terps basketball number one for me, followed by the Skins, followed by probably Terps, the Wizards, then Terps football, and then the Nats. It's probably that order. I'm not a big Caps fan, so maybe I'm not feeling what many of you are, but I honed in last night, periods 2 and 3, after Max texted me and a couple of other people, I saw reached out to say, wow, this guy, I didn't hear it. Did not hear it. So, Henry, you're not going to get, you know, me drilling Sean McDonough for being biased because I don't hear it. I think it's a fan reaction. I think it's fan sensitivity, personally. I think he's excellent. And I thought as the game went on and the Caps turned the tables on the game, especially the way he, you know, lauded over and over again Tom Wilson, who was outstanding in the game last night. I'm not saying that you're wrong because there's a different level of sensitivity here because I'm not the hardcore Caps fan that many of you are. I didn't hear it, man. I just didn't. I think he's effing great at everything he does. He'll be on the show with us at 12:30. So, Wilson last night, you know, I mentioned about game one on Tuesday that even for non-hockey people, if you're a sports fan, you could watch that game and know, wow, one team was much better than the other. Regardless of what the final score was, 2-1 in overtime, one team completely dominated the action. Last night, you don't have to be a hardcore hockey person to know that Tom Wilson was incredible in that game last night. He's such a physical presence, I know, always. But he ended, you know, the game with, you know, an empty netter. He had in the game 2 points, that empty netter plus the assist on the Carlson goal. He had multiple hits. I saw this stat. Tell me that this is wrong. He was diving all over the ice all night long blocking shots, and I saw statistically he was given just 2 shot blocks in the game.
Yeah, I don't know how it
seems light.
It does, because he was flying all over the place, throwing his stick around. Like, that was the big thing for the Caps' MO last night, just not letting Carolina breathe at all, and anytime they tried to get the puck in front of the net or in the center of the ice to set up a shot, they were just throwing sticks out there, and it worked a very high percentage of the time. So 2 blocks seems really low. But Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Matt Roy, they have been defensively. Caps have been crazy good against Carolina. I think they had 30 plus blocked shots again. That's also
because they're getting outshot attempted again, right? The numbers weren't as in the first period. The numbers were almost 4-1. They finished 3-1 in game one.
Mm-hmm.
But then it started to really even up. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt, but
no,
I just thought that Wilson had more should have been credited with more block shots.
For sure. But yeah, it's just the sacrificing, like, because those blocking those shots does not feel good at all.
Yeah,
especially when you're getting hit on the legs or in the calves with no padding whatsoever. It's just, it's a grind. And the Caps are showing no fear. They're playing like a playoff team right now. Like, the adjustments that they made to just, like I said, not let Carolina get any breath. Like, they stymied them on the zone entries a couple of times, just didn't let them get the puck in front. They just weren't letting them, they weren't letting the Canes get in front of Logan Thompson, get easy looks.
Yeah, the first period, though, was just an extension of game one.
Absolutely. I mean,
I'm like, what's going on here? Like, this can't continue.
For
and
sure.
It didn't.
Yeah.
And it didn't. And I thought Logan Thompson was great. You mentioned Van Riemsdyk. That save that he had on the 2-on-1, it was literally almost a 3-on-1 where he knocked that pass down and broke that opportunity up. There were a couple of missed big opportunities for the Caps. McDavid had a. I'm sorry.
Close enough.
McMichael had a goal, but then was it McMichael who missed the open net? There was an open net opportunity, yep. Or was that Beauvillier?
Yeah, it was Beauvillier. It went right to him, like he was right in front of the net, had it wide open, just couldn't lift
wide
it.
Open.
Yeah, anything. Couldn't
72.
Get anything
that's
on it.
Yeah. Beauvillier, right?
Correct.
Yeah. But Wilson, correct me if I'm wrong. He was the best player for
Far
the Caps on the ice last night.
Far and away. If you look at I'm a big charts guy, and there are NHL stat charts that go around after every game, and his bar was way bigger than anybody else's in terms of contribution.
Send me what the charts look like.
I'll send you the NHL
stat card. I want to look at a chart. Yeah. So, good win. You know, I don't know what it'll look like tomorrow night. These games tend to kind of feel like their own entities. You know, I did think that some of the conversation we had after game one with Joe B and others, Emily Kaplan, who was on with us the other day, that the Caps did use Carolina's, aggressiveness against them. Certainly, I think the first goal had something to do with that, the Connor McMichael goal. He's played very well in the postseason. I did want to ask you something, because one of the things that Sean McDonough and Ferraro pointed out towards the end of the game, I'm assuming this is the reason. Ovechkin, with a 2-1 lead, isn't on the ice because of defense, correct?
Correct. So a lot of the times when he's out there, he's kind of hiding, whether it be on the wall or by the bench or on the blue line. He's hunting for scoring chances. He is not doing a lot that needs to be done on the defensive end, which, I mean, he's 39. Who knows? He might be a little bit older than 39, because who knows about Russian birth certificates, but that's a whole other thing. It's just him, his age is showing, and then it's against a really, really fast and quick Carolina team. So it makes sense that he wasn't out there.
All right. 1-1 going back to
1-1,
Carolina.
Baby.
Who knows what'll happen? A good game, not as exciting and not as wide open as that game last night between Edmonton and Vegas. But good win for the Caps. And again, on the Sean McDonough thing, I really kind of honed in for those final two periods. The back half of the first period after Max texted me. And guys, I'm not hearing it, honestly. I think this is a Troy Aikman situation where it's just a little bit too hypersensitive. I'm not sure why you would think that he'd be overly positive towards Washington in his call of the game after the way they played in game one and played the first period last night. I think he's just calling it as he sees it. Although, again, I do admit, and it's one of the things I actually like about Sean McDonough, is that he does, more so than a lot of play-by-play guys, he does inject opinion into the calls of games. He does it football, basketball, hockey. I kind of like that. It's, some would say it's a bit of a no-no for a play-by-play guy. I think a lot of those rules are way, sort of old and outdated. Just like, if you're a member of the media, you can't cheer at a game. Look, if you're there as a member of the media working, sitting in the press box, that's one thing. If you're a member of the media and you're there as a fan, you can do whatever you want. All right, when we come back, we're going to get into some schedule talk. So at 11 a.m., I am going to give you my mock schedule season opener, and one other significant Washington game. But the lead up to that is to go back about a month when we had Mike North, who is one of the key people in the NFL office responsible for putting the schedule together. There's so much that he said that, you know, is worth listening to in advance of the schedule coming out next week. But what you're going to see between now and Wednesday, you're going to see a lot of leaks. He spoke to that. And you're going to see official announcements beginning Monday morning from the league itself. So you'll hear some of what Mike North told us a month ago when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Things. Number one, the Knicks-Celtics game tomorrow at Madison Square Garden, 3:30 tip. Maybe the biggest game in the Knicks' recent history. Playoff tickets just to get in on the aftermarket, $650 just to get into the arena in the upper levels. Tickets are thousands and thousands of dollars a piece. This is equivalent to some of the biggest sporting events of the year. You know, we talked about how the Garden will be insane tomorrow afternoon. The ticket prices are insane. It's going to be, I think, a worthwhile watch, even if you're not an NBA fan, just to see how lit this crowd will be. The Knicks have a 2-0 series lead. There was just one NBA playoff game last night. No Steph Curry for the Warriors meant a disaster. I mean, honestly, there was a point in that game. I think, you know, it started during one of the in-between periods for the Caps, but it was 13-0 Minnesota, and like 5 minutes had elapsed. I was wondering if Golden State could even possibly get to 50 points in the game. They got to 93, but they lost by 24. It was actually competitive at one point in the second half. But Draymond Green got hit with a dead ball technical foul. There was 8:46 to go in the second quarter. Naz Reid, who's playing very well for Minnesota, fouled Draymond Green, and Green then flailed his arms and his left arm, knocked into Naz Reid's head. Reid fell to the floor. They went to the monitor. Reid was called for a personal foul, which was accurate. And then Green, Draymond Green, was assessed a dead ball technical after the review, which I thought was also the right call. He is now two technicals short of receiving an automatic one-game suspension. This was Draymond Green then was very lucky that he didn't get teed up again with a technical foul, because he argued for a while Steph Curry had to come out and kind of talk to him. The coaching staff was out there trying to pull him back. This is what he said after the game.
I'm not an angry black man. I'm a very successful, educated black man with a great family. And I'm great at basketball. I'm great at what I do. The agenda to try to keep making me look like an angry black man is crazy. I'm sick of it. It's ridiculous.
So he thinks the agenda is to make him look like an angry black man. And, you know, Jimmy Butler agreed with him after the game, saying his reputation often leads to calls going against him, but said he isn't worried about Green because he knows how close he is to suspension and he can get it together. Now, Butler didn't exactly agree with him, just said that, you know, he thinks the rep is part of it. So, look, I've watched a lot of Draymond Green over the years. He is a brilliant basketball player. He is, I think, a Hall of Famer. I think he'll eventually be in the Hall of Fame. If he's not in the Hall of Fame, it's all of the other stuff that got in the way. I also find him to be incredibly engaging, charismatic. If you've ever listened to him interviewed or that podcast that he was a part of, he's exceptional in a lot of ways. But he's also, in the midst of competition, and we all know people like this, he's emotionally unstable. He can get to a point where he is incapable of calming himself down and walking away. Last night, whether it was intentional or not, by rule, that was a dead ball technical foul. He flailed his left arm. It hit Naz Reid in the head. Whether it was intentional or not, that was the right call. Very lucky, and has been very lucky over the years, in my opinion, in watching him, that he hasn't been teed up, you know, at a 4-to-1 ratio over the amount that he's actually been teed up at. He argues and gets away with a longer period of arguing with referees than I think any player I've ever seen in the history of the league. Now, eventually they get him, but it takes an awful lot for him to get teed up versus another player. That's where they've gotten to. He is so emotionally unstable at times that the referees actually take that into consideration and don't tee him up many times when he should be teed up. He should have been tossed last night after he was given the dead ball technical, and his constant berating. He was stalking referees. Steph Curry had to come out. The assistant coaches had to come out. It's funny to watch Steve Kerr with him, man. Steve just looks at him and says, you know, get to the bench, and then turns. He doesn't grab him. He doesn't. I don't know the relationship.
They cut to Steve at one point, and he had like gym face from The Office. Just like the,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It was total Jim Halpert face. And I don't get it. I don't know why. I know that they've tried to get him help over the years, and he's sought it out himself. He's just incapable. And at 35, 36 years old now, he's not going to change. You know, let's see if he can keep it together, because with no Steph Curry, and Tim Legler was on with us yesterday, he's going to be calling the next two games in that series for ESPN, games 3 and 4 on Saturday night and on Monday night. And he said they've got to steal one without Steph and hope that they're only down 3-2 when he comes back for a game 6. They can't steal one at home without Draymond Green being a part of it. They just can't. So we'll see what happens. But an interesting and very emotional night for Draymond Green. I think we've said that about him many times. That series, the first two games, I'll tell you who's not playing well, is the guy that many have dubbed like the next Jordan. Anthony Edwards is exceptional as a talent. There's no doubt about it. But he's looked very off in this series. They just didn't need a whole hell of a lot last night. All right, so the schedule comes out next week officially on Wednesday. We'll know, you know, all 17 games, dates, times, networks, the whole nine yards next Wednesday. But for those of you unfamiliar, for now going on close to 20 years, I don't know if it's 20. It's close to 20 years. I've been doing a mock schedule every year for Washington. Now everybody does them. When I first started, I don't think anybody did them. Not that people ripped me off, because I don't think that's what happened at all. But no one was doing them, and I got mocked for doing them. And I still do, and it's fine. That's part of the, you know, it's basically a bit here that I've done over the many years of doing radio here. And I don't know why I started to do it, other than to say that I think I was doing it even before I did it on radio. I would always just kind of map out what Washington's schedule would be, usually in hopes of seeing a lot of primetime games, Monday nighters against the Cowboys, etc. Anyway, I will have my mock schedule, season opener and another significant game in 25 minutes at 11 a.m. And then on my podcast this weekend, I'll put it out and I'll have it on radio on Monday as well on the show. So, and one of the reasons I've got to do it that way is because starting on Monday, we're going to have official announcements on the games, and I don't want to cheat. I want this to be a mock schedule that I put together without any insight. Now, there is a leak out there that many of you think is accurate. I don't know if it is or isn't, but I will tell you about that at 11 a.m. So anyway, Mike North, who has been one of the key people involved in putting the NFL schedule together for the league office, he joined me on the show back in mid-April. It was April 16th, so not exactly a month ago, but almost a month ago. He's the VP of programming development for the NFL, broadcast planning, VP of broadcast planning for the NFL. He was an excellent guest on the show. I don't know why I hadn't had him on before, but he's great. He's been one of the key parts of the schedule-making team. So there was a lot that came out of that, and I thought we should revisit some of it because it is interesting. And I know a lot of you now are starting to get excited about the schedule, much more so than maybe you used to, because the NFL's made a big deal out of it. And oh, by the way, for the first time in forever, like, this is going to be a schedule that is going to feature a lot of massive, high-profile games for our team. So there are a few sound bites that I want to play from that conversation that I had with Mike North back on April 16th. So the first soundbite you're going to hear is he had said to me that, you know, there are 272 games a year and they have this, you know, big kind of grid and they got to put them all in different spots. And he said, but every year there are 10 to 20 games that are obvious that they have to put in high profile spots. You know, they've got to put on, you know, Sunday night football, Monday night football, opening night, Thursday nights, Black Friday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, the international games, etc. And I asked him, I said, you know, with Washington being a legitimate contender again after all of the years of not being, I said, how different is the view in putting together Washington's schedule this year? Here's what he said.
Very. Very different. And honestly, as you know, somebody who's been with the league for a long time, grew up on the East Coast, you know, when we were growing up, you know, the Redskins were a thing. And yes, it's been a while, but I don't think, we'll see what happens. I don't think that fan base left. I think it's just kind of lying dormant. So now that they're competitive again, an NFC Championship game appearance, I don't think there's any question you're going to find the Commanders all over the national television schedule. And they've got a great schedule. You think about not only all those NFC East games, obviously every year those matters, but you play a Detroit, you play a Kansas City, you play Chicago and Green Bay. Like, there's a lot of really good games on the Commanders' schedule. So, yeah, whereas in previous years, you know, maybe a lot of Sunday 1 o'clock starts in the Beltway, that's probably not what's going to happen this year. I think you're going to see a real challenge for Coach Quinn and the team. We're going to be out of our routine playing a lot of Sunday nights, some Monday nights, some Thursdays. Got to be in the mix for kickoff in Philadelphia. Got to be in the mix again for Thanksgiving in Dallas. There's going to be all kinds of places where we're going to see Commanders games this year.
So, much different than it's been, obviously. We all understand that. Not only were they a 12-win team that got to the NFC Championship game, they have one of the league's superstar quarterbacks. And that combination means they are going to be profiled in high, you know, leverage spots schedule-wise all season long. As we've been saying, get ready for some late nights because there are going to be a bunch of them. I asked him specifically about the opener in Philadelphia, where the defending champs open up every year in the first game. They call it the kickoff game. This will be on September 4th, I think, of the upcoming fall. This is what he said about that particular game. Thursday night, September 4th, the defending champion Eagles will play host to somebody. Is a perceived quality opponent, Mike, you know, an attractive matchup between Philly and another good team or perceived good team? Is it necessary? Meaning, you know, it's the first game of the year. Everybody's going to watch no matter who's playing in it.
It's a great question. I mean, I think we've done it both ways.
Yes.
In recent years. You remember a couple of years ago, we put Detroit in there.
Yep.
Off of their first winning season in a long time. They had knocked off, I think they knocked off the Packers,
yeah,
right?
Last game of the year, yeah.
Yep, so they kind of played their way into that window. It maybe wasn't one of the top 10 or top 20 games of the season, you wouldn't think, but man, Detroit went in there, gave them all they could handle, got out of there with a win, and sort of propelled themselves onto this, you know, new perception of Detroit where they're an NFC mainstay. So there's teams that kind of play their way into that position, but, you know, you can't go wrong with a mainstay. Like you said, you put Baltimore, Kansas City last year into that window, and it came down to the very end with the kid's toe on the white in the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got 28 million people watching. So, you know, there's probably a floor to what that window could do, and I think we're going to want to put, you know, a game in there that our fans are going to care about. But I'm not sure we've really tested the ceiling of what that window could be. And as you look at the Eagles' home schedule this year,
yeah,
it's spectacular. I could make a case literally for every single game on their schedule.
Right.
And obviously Washington would be one of them. I mean, the last time we saw these two teams play, it was a whatever 30, 40-point blowout in the championship game. But like we said, you add Debo, you add some pieces on the line. Jaden's got another year, got a full offseason. Who knows? Maybe Washington-Philly's a great window for that game in week one, and everybody can be excited about it for the next 4 months. But I could make the same case for Chicago. You know, a Bears-Eagles game there with Caleb and the coach who probably could have had any job he wanted, and he chose Chicago, and he chose to go work with the kid, and they've added some pieces to their offensive line. Denver coming off a playoff. Dallas getting their quarterback with a new coach. Detroit would be fun. The two best, arguably, teams in the conference last year. I can make a case for literally almost every game,
yeah,
on their schedule. The Rams have earned it. I mean, you can make a case for every single game. It's less about that one game and more about the trickle-down effect on the rest of the Eagles' schedule, the rest of the Sunday night NBC schedule, the rest of the week one schedule. It's not just about checking one box. It's about checking a lot of boxes.
Interesting stuff about that game. That game has featured, like last year, a rematch of the AFC Championship game, the Ravens at the Chiefs. And the year before that, the Lions, who nobody knew would end up being a good team, they were the opponent for the Chiefs. The year before that, it was Bills-Rams. Really good matchup in the kickoff game. The Rams were the defending champs. The year before that, the Cowboys and the Buccaneers. The Cowboys hadn't done much in the postseason. Houston was involved in the 2020 game. You can go back. You know, it's not always the perceived high-profile matchup. That's a real hard part of, I'm sure, what he discussed. Like, there's this trickle-down effect. Like, if you put Washington in that game, well, maybe you're missing out on a Washington-Philly Sunday night or Monday night game that would do a massive number in October or November when, you know, you'd be wasting it. You know, Fox is probably going to protect one of the Washington-Philadelphia games and put it as a 425, you know, lead game doubleheader-wise on a Sunday. I'm guessing that will happen. But that was him on the opener in Philly. I asked him about just Thanksgiving. I mean, we know that Washington and Dallas have played a lot on Thanksgiving over the years. This is what he said about that.
Maybe it was Thanksgiving, you know, Redskins-Cowboys game on Thanksgiving, as the Thanksgiving tradition has continued to grow. You know, that's where we capture a lot of casual fans. I think I saw a stat somewhere where, you know, 8 to 10% of NFL fans watch their first game of the year on Thanksgiving.
Wow.
So you're with the family, the television's on, it's the Cowboys year after year, and felt like for a long time it was, you know, a constant, you know, Redskins Cowboys just felt natural. Now, you know, you put a Redskins Cowboys game on Thanksgiving, I think we're still holding, what, 42 million from a couple of years ago when that game was on, and that was before, you know, the Commanders became, you know, what the Commanders are now. And you add Debo and you add all these interesting pieces, a Commanders Cowboys game on Thanksgiving, you got to think is looking at, you know, the most watched regular season game ever for the NFL. But is that the best use of that asset? You know, you could put it on a Sunday afternoon on Fox and probably get 30, 35 million. You could, you know, like we said, have the Commanders in kickoff. You can have them on Thanksgiving. You can have them on Black Friday. You can have them on Christmas. You can have them in Madrid and have them go over and play Miami. There's so many ways to dole out these 17 Commanders games. A lot more options than we've had.
So I know a lot of you think, well, this is an obvious game in the upcoming season, Washington at Dallas on Thanksgiving. And he said it might be the all-time record number. The 2016 game for several years when Dak was a rookie, they were 9-1. Washington was 6-3-1. They had just absolutely pounded Green Bay on Sunday Night Football. That, for I think 5 or 6 years, was the most watched regular season game in NFL history, and I think that's the game he was referring to. But I think
in either Brazil or Spain this year.
Hello, what are you playing there?
It is.
Hey, Max. Max, you there?
I'm here. We're good.
Yeah. So hold off on that.
Yeah,
that
my
next
fault.
One.
That's my fault.
No worries. What was I saying? Thanksgiving, the Giants Cowboys game last year did a massive number, and the Giants sucked. That's where the NFL and the schedule makers, it's interesting because opening night, people are going to watch. Thanksgiving, people are going to watch. I thought that was an interesting stat he gave. 8-9% of NFL fans watch their first game on Thanksgiving Day. So there's no guarantee of Washington and Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. And then this is what he said specific to the two international opportunities that Washington has. Washington has the Chargers as a road opponent. The Chargers will host the game on Friday night, September 5th from Brazil. And then they also have the Dolphins as a road opponent. The Dolphins have the first ever game in Madrid. So I asked them about the opportunities for those two spots. All right, what are the chances Washington plays in either Brazil or Spain this year?
It is definitely a possibility. Personal opinion, I like them for kickoff better than I like them for Brazil in week one, but obviously not my decision. Spain would be pretty interesting, kind of right in the middle of the season. It might cost you Thanksgiving, which is something we're going to have to think about. If you play the Spain game in week 11, let's say, and then Washington comes home to the bye in week 12 after Madrid, then you probably can't turn around and play on Thursday in Dallas on Thanksgiving. So is that the right thing? What would go into Thanksgiving instead? They're not even guaranteed their bye coming back from Madrid. We've got so many international games now, some of them early, some of them late. You can't give everybody their buys after international games. So do you go to Madrid, come back to a home game, and then quickly get on the road for a short week in Dallas on Thanksgiving? I don't know if that's the best way to, you know, set up the Commander schedule. So are they in the mix for both Brazil and Madrid? Absolutely, yes. Are they in the mix for kickoff? Yes. Are they in the mix for Thanksgiving? Yes. Are they in the mix for Christmas? Yes. We're not going to be able to do all those things, so we're really just going to come down, like we said, to vanilla, chocolate, strawberry at the end. This one's got the Commanders in kickoff, so they're not in Brazil. This one's got them in Madrid, so they're not on Thanksgiving. This one's got them on Thanksgiving, so they're not on Christmas. This one's got them on Christmas, so they're going to play two short week Thursdays. They're all going to be a little different. I love the flexibility. I love the optionality. As you said at the beginning, this is probably something we haven't really had with Washington games for, you know, decades, really. So this is exciting for us. It makes all the NFC East games more interesting. The NFC East crosses into the NFC North, so that'll be fun this year. There's a lot of really good games. No question the Commanders are going to find themselves in some pretty prominent windows.
So that answer was very interesting. So I don't think they're, you know, going to be in the mix for Brazil. I don't. And by the way, I think that's better for Washington. If they're going to play an international game against the Chargers or Dolphins, have it against the Dolphins in Madrid, because the Chargers don't have a home field advantage. So you're basically taking two road games of your nine and making them neutral site games. Miami would have a home field advantage more so than the Chargers would. You know, the NFC plays nine road games this year. It's very possible Washington's going to have two of them where they're either the favored team crowd-wise or it's neutral at best. But what he said in that answer, and I have talked to just a couple of people. I'm not learning anything specific to the schedule. But I think it's interesting. Teams aren't guaranteed their bye weeks off international games anymore. There are just too many international games to guarantee it. We've seen it the last few years. Teams, in some cases, teams don't necessarily want their bye week coming back from an international game. There are other ways to give Washington, you know, an extra day or so coming off an international game. They could play them on Monday night coming back from an international game the following week. But what you did hear him say is that it's probably an either or, Madrid or Thanksgiving, not both. And I know a lot of you, based on one of the leaks last night, said it's Madrid bye week Thanksgiving. I don't think that's going to happen. I could be wrong. I don't know for sure. But I think what I learned there from him is it's either or. They're either going to have that international game or they're going to play on Thanksgiving. And I think the way it shapes up is if they end up playing in Madrid, they don't play Thanksgiving, but they play Christmas Day. Because I think they're going to be on one of the two holidays, for sure. All right. There were a couple of other things that he said about the schedule that I wanted to play for you. I asked him about the opponent on Washington's schedule, and it's a good one this year that stands out the most. You'll hear that. You'll also hear, you know, how many primetime games are allowed. We'll get to that from Mike North, VP of Program Development for the NFL. He was on the show about a month ago talking about the NFL schedule, which comes out next week. We'll get to that, and then I'll give you my mock season opener and another game from the schedule that I put together at 11 a.m. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also now on the Team 980 YouTube page streaming. When you get there, hit the subscribe button and hit the like button for us.
All right, the Caps get their lick back against Carolina to tie the series 1-1. Connor McMichael opened the scoring with a breakaway, and John Carlson put the Caps up 2-0. Tom Wilson buried the empty netter to seal the victory. Caps win 3-1. The Oilers take down the Golden Knights in overtime. Connor McDavid with a silky pass to Leon Draisaitl to ice the game. Oilers win 5-4. The Wolves, Timberwolves, put a beatdown on the Golden State Warriors minus Steph Curry. They won 117-93. Julius Randle had 24 points, 7 rebounds, and 11 assists. The Washington Nationals will take on the St. Louis Cardinals tonight. Mitchell Parker expected to be on the bump, and Nats on Deck starts at 6:15 on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
All right, a little bit more of Mike North, the VP of Program Development for the NFL, who came on the show a month ago and talked about the schedule-making. He's one of the key guys in the schedule-making process for the NFL. Coming up in about 10 minutes, I'm going to give you my season mock opener for Washington and one other key game. I've completed my mock schedule. It's done. I actually shared it with somebody yesterday afternoon in the event that games got leaked, just so that that person could back me up on what I had before the leaks came out. But you're going to hear what he said about the leaks here in a moment. But this is what he said about the opponent that stands out the most on Washington's schedule this year. What was the opponent on their schedule that stood out to you the most?
This year, for coming up?
Yep.
You know, obviously the division games matter a lot. I'm just not sure, you know, you've got six of them every year. I mean, those are, I don't want to say commonplace, but hard to say one of those stands out. I would probably look at like a, I'd probably look at Kansas City, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the last time the Commanders went out to Kansas City. It was probably 8 years ago, would be my guess, just by rotation. And it was probably a 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon game that was available in 15
they
or 20.
Played Monday night. They played Monday night
at Arrowhead. You're right. I do remember that. A perfect opportunity to do that, run it back again. But it could also be a Sunday night game. It could be a Thursday night game. It could be, you know, one of those Sunday afternoon 4:25 games. You know, save it for later in the season. You think both teams are going to be competitive. You know, a Commanders-Chiefs game down the stretch, Jaden and Mahomes, playoff spots on the line, Sunday afternoon, 4:30. It's kind of cold in the Northeast, so everybody's staying home and watching TV anyway. That sounds like 28, 30, 32 million people watching that game. I think that would be that would be a fun one, but obviously the Dallas games are going to matter. You know, I don't remember the last time you've been to Lambeau, but we're going out to Lambeau this year. Certainly the return trip to Philly, you know, on the championship game rematch. There's a bunch. It's going to be a really fun year, but if I had to pick one, I'm probably looking at Kansas City.
Yeah, that Kansas City game, a Mahomes-Jaden Daniels matchup at Arrowhead, there are a lot of possibilities for that one. This is what he said just on the – I asked him if there's a max amount you can be in prime time. This is what he said. Is there a max of prime time or standalone spots?
There's not a max of standalone spots just because we have so many more than we've ever had before. And as we think about primetime games, it's really more about, you know, what's right for the fan. Like if we were going to schedule the Commanders in five or six primetime games, they probably shouldn't all be at home, right? I'm not sure that's the right thing to do to ask the fans to come out at night over and over and over again. Same thing competitively on the road. They shouldn't all be on the road. The coach isn't going to want to play road Sunday night, road Monday night, road Thursday night, week after week. So going to have to balance between the competitive impact of the primetime games and the fan friendliness of moving the games to primetime. Again, I think this is something where the competitiveness of the team, the record, the, you know, upward trajectory, if you will, buys us a little bit of cover. I don't think the fans are going to really scream and yell when they see a few home primetime games because the team has earned it. So it's six or so, seven maybe as a result of flex, but got to balance them between home and away. Want to be fair competitively and also want to do right by the fans.
Mike North, who is on with me in mid-April, he's the VP of broadcast planning for the NFL, talking about the schedule and Washington's schedule specifically, which will be out officially in full on Wednesday. When we come back, you'll hear him talk about the leaks that come out a few days before the schedule release. That's become a bit of a cottage industry here in recent years. And there was a big Washington leak last night. You'll hear what he said about the validity of these leaks at this point in the process. And then I'll have my mock season opener and one other game that I've mocked out. The whole thing will be out over the weekend. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.